Back together again, you and I wrapping up a very busy week and month. Friday, February 27th, 2026 on Connecticut Today. I updated listeners on an emerging proposal in Hartford to possibly implement a state income tax surcharge on its richest residents. It's a plan that's already up and running in Massachusetts with some interesting results. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso stopped by for his update, offering his thoughts on a controversial emergency bill that passed in Hartford and Southern Connecticut State University. Sports communications and sports marketing instructor Len Mee dropped by to talk about Problem Gambling Awareness Month and the continued integration of legal wagering and mainstream sports programming.
All right, so at the risk of starting with something that's going to make your blood boil, why don't we do it anyway? Because it's a Friday, and we'll play it a little loosey-goosey today, but it's something that people always want to talk about here because it can go off in so many other different directions. And we're talking about, yes, that magic three-letter word or variations thereof. You can say tax, T-A-X, tax. Spit it out, Paul. I only have two cups of coffee left here. Tax, T-A-X, taxing, T-A-X-I-N-G, taxes, T-A-X-E-S. You know what we're talking about here. We pay our local taxes. We pay our federal taxes to Uncle Sam and whomever he may be. Is Uncle Sam married? Do we ever know that? And, of course, we pay what we are told to do on a state level here. And there is a cadre of lawmaker in this state. There is a thought in this state, especially in Connecticut, and especially where you get to certain areas of the state, lower Fairfield County, the so-called Gold Coast, you know, what people call the other Gold Coast, out beyond the city of New Haven, out onto the eastern shoreline, parts of the Connecticut River Valley, and up to and around Hartford with some very affluent neighborhoods there, West Hartford, Glastonbury, Simsbury, West Simsbury. There are people who say we don't tax a certain cadre of people enough. And my guess would be that if our current governor was not of the rich class in the state, which is what he is, we all know that, my guess is our taxes may have been raised, or when I say our, I mean the state in total, maybe not me, because I'm up in that, I'm not up in that rarefied air, but let's just say taxes may have been raised already, but it's not for a lack of trying. By a group called the Connecticut Legislature's Tax Equity Caucus. So getting above and beyond this crazy mega bill that you heard from Chris, that was passed last night and got passage by the Senate and the House. Is the governor going to veto any of this? Who knows? Who knows? But having said that, there are lawmakers in the state who want the richest among us, many of those in Fairfield County, many of those out east opposite New Haven, many of those in suburban Hartford, to pay more. Story here from today, early in the Hartford Business Journal. Imposing a surcharge on your capital gains and dividends for the wealthiest taxpayers and raising the top marginal rate by 1 point. All apparently again, and it doesn't mean this is going anywhere, but it's food for thought here because it'll take us off into some various directions this afternoon. Raising the top marginal tax rate by 1 point, the top priorities of the General Assembly's Tax Equity Caucus. There's only a couple of months left in this session here, but they want to raise some taxes. Now, you know this is probably not going to happen, but it bodes the question. I don't know, should it? The caucus was formed back in 2023, has more than 50 progressive Democrats in the House. They presented their priorities this morning during a news conference. Representative Jason Doucette, Democrat Manchester, chair of the caucus, said its focus is to reform the regressive nature of Connecticut's tax system that disproportionately impacts working families. So what do they want? What exactly does the Tax Equity Caucus of the General Assembly want? Well, let's look at a few things here, and you tell me what you think. Now, would some people of high means, I don't know, gladly pay these taxes? They might. Would some people of the higher means not want to pay these taxes? They might not. Would there be a certain category of people in the middle that would say, I'd rather not, but what the heck, I like living here. Well, they might. They want to pass a Senate Bill 103, which seeks to establish a refundable child tax credit. They want to establish a capital gains surcharge on the state's highest taxpayers. They want to increase the highest marginal tax rate for the personal income tax, basically from 7 to 8%. Right now, it's 6.99%, and they want to go to 7.99%. There's another bill that seeks to adjust the methodology, big word there, used to calculate the threshold amounts. Now, we're getting to the weeds here, kids. The threshold amounts for volatility fund transfers and increase the maximum capacity of the budget reserve fund. Now, this all gets into the state budget and the guardrails and all that. We can back off on that. Doucette said the increases to the state's wealthiest citizens are not just about raising revenue, but correcting the inequities of the state's tax system. He and other folks earlier today cited changes at the federal level that they said provided more than $1 trillion in tax cuts for the wealthy that were paid for by $1.5 million in cuts to health care and food assistance. Now, we could go on and on and on and on. But this is a debate that we seem to have every year here. And there's nothing wrong with that. So we begin with this today, right here on Connecticut Today at WICC, 600 AM, 95.9 FM, and of course online, voiceofct.com. Pretty basic question. We've got answers already coming in on the text line here, which is good to see. Some phone numbers as well, phone calls as well. Should there be any new tax increases on Connecticut's richest residents? Now, again, what did I say? I said the richest here. Now, how do you define rich? I don't know. You tell me. But the tax caucus, the tax, what do they call themselves? I want to make sure I get this right. The Tax Equity Caucus lists their priorities, including tax increases on the wealthy. I have an idea. How about tax cuts for a middle-class guy like me? Does that work at all? I don't know. You tell me. So listen, I know that you don't want to tax a nice guy like me anymore. But how about you? And how about you? And how about you saying, hey, that guy down the corner is worth $3 million. He's got a huge business there. He should pay a little more. You tell me. What do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Is it all right to be generally? Now, is it all right to be generally anti-tax, but, say, well, yeah, maybe another 0.5% on or 1%. On somebody that may be worth 10 or 15 or 20 million bucks. Yeah, that may be a way to go here. You see what I'm saying? And I try to stop myself oftentimes at laughing at people and deriding people who think there's something wrong with our tax code, especially here in Connecticut. Now, again, I don't want us to become California or places like Massachusetts or whatever, although Massachusetts, I think, they just hike their taxes on rich folks. And I think a lot more people would be further amenable to tax increases if they kind of knew where the money was going specifically, and if they kind of had some sort of a better grip on what the money was for. The reason I started with this today is because we have a bunch of legislators, granted they admit, 50 members of the, what is it, basically about 100 members of the State House in the Democratic caucus, 50 of them, the progressive side of things, they make up what's called the General Assembly's Tax Equity Caucus. They want higher taxes on the wealthy. We could get into the numbers here and whatever, but a couple of things they're looking at. They want to increase the top marginal tax rate in this state from roughly 7.99, roughly 7%. It's 6.99 right now. So it's the old thing, is price something at $6.99 if you don't want somebody to say it's $7. But basically, they want an increase of 7% to 8%. In the state's top marginal tax rate, but for, you know, some really, really rich people. You for that? You against that? What about a capital gains tax increase? What if somebody made a killing in one tax year on their capital gains? Should they pay? I'm not talking about being confiscatory here. Should they pay a little more? A wee bit more? A skosh more? You know what I mean? Jeff in Westport starts us off this afternoon on this Friday, heading into the weekend. Jeff, how are you? What's up? Hello, Jeff.
So what's going to happen, Paul, is all of us little Paul Pacellis out there.
Oh, boy.
If we work our little tails off.
Yes.
And then we get picked up by WNBC.
Yeah.
Or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And you get a pay increase.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Paul, they go to you, hey, Paul, we want you to give another $10,000.
Okay.
Other than your house taxes.
Yeah.
And everything else, we want you to give us more money.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah.
Because we're going to give it all to, now, already, they're going to give the tax break for kids.
Yeah.
Well, guess where that's going to benefit? That's going to benefit people in Bridgeport, Norwalk, New Haven, and Hartford,
mm-hmm.
in the inner cities, where they say, hey, if I have a kid, I'll get more money. That's exactly what they're going to do again, and they're taxing us right out of the state. I know many millionaires
really?
That have actually left the state because it's not feasible anymore. Delaware, Maryland, I think it's Delaware has, what, no sales tax or no income tax,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and no car tax. I mean, all that stuff makes a big difference.
So
if you're one millionaire, that's $10,000 out extra.
Mm-hmm.
Extra, not. I mean, 7% already is $70,000.
Yeah.
So what, you want to pay $80,000? Why? Because it's going to the inner city people, so the Democrats can keep their power.
So you personally know what, through your business contacts and what you do, that the people that have left?
Yep. Multiples. Down the South Carolina, Myrtle Beach area, some to Florida, some to North Carolina.
And when you ask them, Jeff, why, what do they say? Was it one and done with the taxes, or are they just... Was it the repeated increases, or just saw no relief
right. Repeated increases. Even my house just got, they did in Monroe, Connecticut, they did a revaluation
Reval.
Of
yeah.
all houses.
Yeah.
Reval.
Yeah.
$150,000 my house went up.
Wow.
Which is another $4,000
wow.
a year.
Wow.
That's crazy.
It is.
I told my wife, like, do you realize we spent like $250,000 in taxes in the last 10 years?
I know. That's
insane. You say that out loud to somebody from Wisconsin,
yeah.
and they look at you like,
yeah, I know.
How dumb are you?
Yeah. And
so,
just think,
yeah.
and just think, Jeff, if you or your wife or whatever, or if your family, never mind $250,000, the $250,000, if you took half of that at $125,000 over 25 years or 20 years and invested it, even with safe
oh
investments.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, you'd be sitting pretty
yeah.
now. Wow.
I mean, Lamont's already taken away anybody who wins at the casinos,
mm-hmm.
you have to pay 7%, no matter what. So anything over $1,500,
yeah.
7% comes off that no matter what. And you cannot use profit loss win statements from the casino to justify showing that you lost money.
Ah.
The only thing you can use now are scratch-offs and lotto. Old scratch-off and old lotto tickets. To get some kind of break.
Can you imagine putting 100 scratch-off tickets in your tax return and sending them to the DRS? Wouldn't that be great?
Man.
Hi, Jeff. I appreciate it. Thanks, man. I got to run. I'm sorry, Jeff. I'm up against the time-wise. Can you imagine that? That's a visual I'd love to see, right? Some family sends in their, you know, their Connecticut return of the Commissioner Bowden there, the Connecticut state tax return, and they're looking to get, they're looking to get a break on their taxes, and somebody at the Revenue Services folk up there in Hartford, they open it up, and, you know, what is this? It's a big, fat, manila envelope. Is it a bomb? No. Is it ticking? No. Oh, look at that. The guy bought 2 tickets a week for a year. There's 104 tickets here. And you get the scratch-off stuff on them, right? Wouldn't that be great? I got to try that. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Great to have you with us. And this gentleman joins us every Friday to kind of help us put the capper on what's going on in and around the city of Bridgeport, Fairfield County, and especially what's going on in Hartford. Former Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso joins us. Chris, great to have you on. Good evening again. And boy, did we have high drama. I guess we're still waiting on what the governor may do here, Chris, but a bunch of bills, right, rolled into one under emergency certification, and a lot of people, Chris, said, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? What are your thoughts on this as you watched what happened?
Well, the session got off to a hell of a start, didn't it? You know, Paul, there among colleagues, there's always where you bundle bills together, and it's referred to as an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
and partly because if you bunch things together, it's harder for people to vote no or vote yes, right? It's an awkward spot. In this case, though, when you peel away what took place, most of the bills in this legislation did have public hearings last session, and they were voted out of the committees, went into the House and the Senate, and usually through filibustering, which occurs, usually the minority party, or it could be some Democrats that will oppose something and keep speaking until the clock runs out, the session's over, and these bills die. So many of them ended up into this document. I think the issue comes up with emergency, really where it seems to be the biggest issue are the earmarks in the budget. So these are specific carve-outs for particular legislators or an interest by leadership. And I think that's what's raising the question here, because earmarks usually don't have hearings.
Yeah.
They're put into the budget in the implementer bill, which becomes part of the budget itself. And I think that's what's raising the concern. Why are these emergencies? And I think that seems to be the heart of it, frankly. And I think that's where the governor has said he'd consider line item vetoes, particularly for the earmarks. And, you know, there's one that I think has raised the biggest question. The senator in Hartford, who's an educator, apparently, at least the allegations are that he steered money to specific organizations, and the feds are investigating that. Now, in this emergency bill is another $750,000 going to the organization where that senator works. He's employed by the organization.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's raising the question. That's what's arguing about corruption and issues like that. And I think that's where it's put the governor in a position where the governor is considering maybe line item vetoes for many of those earmarks. The governor also has a piece of legislation working its way through the system where earmarks are not prohibited, but they must be looked at carefully. So that when the money goes to a nonprofit organization, that organization has the capacity, it has all the documentations in place. For example, it's registered with the state of Connecticut, the Attorney General's office, that the mission lines up with the funding, how that money will be used. I think those are all legitimate and very fair questions. And I think that's what's leading the fight on this issue is, again, the earmarks. And then one particular senator, you know, who already his actions are under investigation, you know, allegations that have been made. And I think that's what's raising this issue here. If you listen to the floor debate, for example, in the House, there were parts of the bill that many legislators, including Republicans, would have supported. You know, the anti-Semitic program and training. There was going to be, I guess, like a blue ribbon panel put together to look at those issues. I think many legislators would support it. And there's other parts of the bill, too. But when you put it under emergency, what that does is those items within that document don't require the public hearing because you can bypass it in the sense of an emergency. But the truth is that probably the majority of the bills in there already had hearings. Last year, the public weighed in on it. The bills came out of committee. And I think it's the way of the majority leadership to move these bills through because this session, because it's 3 months, is going to be very tight. And the legislature is like a funnel in the sense you put the bills in the top, you know, the funnel. And what works its way through the funnel and comes out wins or loses based on time.
And listen, you know, look, people call Ned Lamont a bunch of things. He's no fool. You don't get to his position in politics or in wealth by doing dumb things. And when I saw he's saying, hey, don't be surprised if I draw a line through some of these things. I think I think that was a clear message, Chris. Like, look, we have an election coming up here. What are you doing to me?
Well, that's it. And the other thing, he did that with the housing bill.
Yes.
And if you notice, he didn't, you know, the election was this year. He could have easily let it go through. But no, he said, no, I'm going to veto it and work something out. And that's what he did. I think it's the same thing with this. You know, I hate when people say, Ned Lamont's corrupt or this politician's corrupt or that one. I hate that. I see that on social media all the time. There's no proof. There's no evidence, but people throw that out. And I think the earmarks have raised enough questions and enough doubt because of the federal investigation, the state auditor's review of those earmarks. I think Ned Lamont stopping and saying, there's a problem here that we need to address.
Sure.
Well, you know, the state doesn't want to say we can't help certain nonprofits because those nonprofits carry out services at a greater, a lesser cost, I should say, to the state. If the state had to do all of those services, the cost would increase drastically. So you use nonprofits to carry out different things. However, those earmarks need to be scrutinized. And many times, Paul, they're not because you know, you put together a budget, then there's a budget implementer, which means budget is adopted, and now you've got to put the budget in action. And that's where all these earmarks come in. And so, you know, credit to the Republicans to raise the issue that, hey, there's something we need to look at this. And credit to the governor for saying, you know, hey, we do need to look at this, and I could possibly veto this. So, you know, I think that's the beauty of a government that works right, that you have this back and forth. But I think it's a lot dealing with the earmarks. And again, you know, and it was raised in discussion, some of these earmarks, the organization isn't even registered as a non-stock corporation with the state of Connecticut, right?
I saw that. I'm like, what? The addresses don't match. There's no clear list of who the president is and who the, I mean, really, Chris? What, are we giving out money here? Just, oh, my God.
And the other thing is every 501c3, you know, under the tax code, you have a mission as an organization.
Yes, mission
part of your
statement.
Bylaws. Right, and if you don't follow that purpose with this funding, then technically you're in violation. So I think that's why the state wants to review it. I give kudos because I think this process needs to be slowed down. It needs to be looked at. And I think that's the crux of the argument that's made. And I think people have to be careful not to worry about all the thing around it. It's really the earmarks that need to be looked at because you know, some of them are sizable, Paul.
Yeah.
I think 174,000 going, I think, to some type of veteran group. I think I read maybe VFW organization, okay. One of the towns.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it may be legitimate. I don't know what it's for. But in turn, a proper review, making sure all documentation is lined up, you know, that could be very beneficial. It may be to help veterans in need. You know, there may be a legitimate reason.
Mm-hmm.
But when you just put it in a bill without oversight or review, that's when problems occur, you know?
Absolutely. Chris, thank you so much for your input on this. Yeah. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Paul.
All right, Chris, there you go. Republican, check that. Democratic, former state rep, Chris Caruso, mayoral candidate, city council member in Bridgeport as well. Even if you are a casual consumer of sports, if you're not a guy or gal who watches every minute of every game of your favorite pro or college team, even if you're a casual observer, you know that the impact so far of legal gaming, legal gambling, is only getting more and more. And something that was considered, you know, literally verboten, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, is now so much in the mainstream. The idea of going to your quote unquote bookie or the guy in the firehouse, whatever, is for the most part gone by the wayside. But with all this expansion of legal gambling, are problems. Problem Gambling Awareness Month is coming up, and we still, once again, have another year, especially with March Madness and the start of baseball and all that, and the playoffs coming up, and the NBA and NHL and all that. Where's this going? The relationship between leagues, the proliferation of this, is this horse way out of the barn, or will there now be, you know, ways to rein this in? We welcome Len Mead. He is a professor and instructor in sports communications and sports marketing with our friends at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. Len is a veteran sports media executive, most recently serving, get this, as VP of Programming and Production and Operations at DraftKings, where he helped lead the launch and programming strategy behind DraftKings Network, oversaw betting-focused content across digital and streaming platforms. Oh, by the way, he had leadership roles with ESPN, NBC Sports, NESN, VSIN, where a buddy of mine used to work, in PointsBet. Len Mead joins us on the program. Len, good afternoon. It's Paul here on WICC. How are you?
I'm very good, Paul. Good talking to you.
Len, 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, did you ever think any of this would have reached the level we're at and continue to see, or not? Or were you one of the guys who said, yeah, just wait, it's happening? Talk about the last few years here, because this has just been amazing.
Yeah, I think I'm a little surprised it's happened as fast as it's happened, but I am not surprised that we eventually would get to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what's sort of fascinating about all this is you know, in the United States, we typically we think that we're ahead of the curve and everything starts here and then the rest of the world adapts to it. And betting is one of these cases where it's been the opposite,
mm-hmm.
where Europe is way, way ahead of us on this stuff. Like, it has been part of the culture and completely normalized there, you know, a decade before it happened here. And so, you know, the lens that I look at a lot of this through is everything that's happening here in the United States already happened in Europe.
Yeah.
And if it has happened in Europe and it hasn't happened here yet, it's probably coming.
Well, you know, Len, and I joke about this because I get emails, a bunch of them from the overseas sites and the European sites. Len, how long before we have legal political betting? And I know there are new platforms on here, these polymarket things and Kalshi and like that. But, man, the Europeans, I remember seeing years ago, you know, who's going to be the next prime minister? Who's going to control parliament? I mean, they're serious about this.
Yeah, we could talk for a while about this if you wanted to. The prediction market.
Yeah.
It's the name for, you know, Kalshi and Polymarket,
yeah.
and there's a half dozen others. to me, I mean, again, like anybody that says that this is not a form of betting is really doing some verbal gymnastics, I think, to try to stay on the right side of the law.
Yeah.
And but by the way, it's working, you know, like I don't know if you want to talk about this level of detail in things, but, you know, the reason why there has been such a boon for these prediction markets is that it is the states that regulate all of the sports betting, which means if you're DraftKings or FanDuel or MGM, you got to go to 50 different state governments, do your lobbying, make your case, pay an entry fee, you know, work by their guidelines in order to get permission. But the prediction markets are handled by the federal government.
Yeah.
And with one swoop, they can essentially take bets in all 50 states. And they do right now.
It's amazing. So listen, audience trends, industry trends, you've been on the inside here. What do you see happening now, Len? And what is going to happen? Is sports driving the betting trends, or have we now turned a corner? Are we getting close where the betting and the wagering is really what's drawing people here? Do we have a cart and horse thing here? What's going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess there are a lot of justifications that anybody in the sports industry makes when it comes to, you know, why should we be okay with this, right? Like, why is it good that there's legalized sports betting? And the position from the leagues has always been that, I think, kind of a twofold thing. For one, people are doing it anyways, and at least if it's regulated, it's you have sunshine on it, right? So you can see what's happening, you can track it. You know, when you see stuff like the NBA, you know, players getting caught up in these betting scandals, you know, the NBA would actually argue, thank goodness betting is legalized, because if it wasn't, that stuff was probably happening and you never would have known. So like, that's one part of it. I think the other justification has always been that, hey, more people betting means you're more likely to pay attention to sports, right?
You know,
like if you have a favorite team and they're losing by 30 in the fourth quarter, you might turn the game off. But if you have a player prop bet and you want to make sure your guy gets his 10 rebounds, well, then heck, I'm gonna watch all the way to the end until he gets his 10th rebound.
Yeah, good point. Self-governance. That was one thing I wanted to talk about with you about today. Len Mead is the guest from Southern Connecticut State University. Len, do we have enough of a balance here? Is there enough self-governance, self-control? Are the relationships good enough as they can be, say, between FanDuel and DraftKings and MGM and Caesars and the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, all these leagues? Or is that still kind of a work in progress? What do you think of that?
I mean, to me, and this is coming with no insider information, but, you know, these are always games of follow the money, right? You know, and so, as you know, when the Terry Rozier and the Chauncey Billups and the NBA betting stuff came up, understandably, everybody at the NBA and frankly across all of major sports, you know, got up in a clinch a little bit, right? Like, this is not good. Like, this is a bad look for all of us. And there was a sudden burst of noise that, hey, we the league, like, we're good with sports betting, but we got to put some more limits on it. You know, maybe there shouldn't be all these player prop bets. Or maybe, I think Adam Silver, I want to say, he said, maybe we shouldn't have prop betting on guys that are on 10-day contracts.
Yeah.
You know, like the kind of player that is most susceptible to getting caught up in one of these things. And by the way, that all feels kind of common sense, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is that any restrictions you put on it, that is going to hurt the sports book, right? Like, that is less money being made. And if the sports books are making less money, they are going to pay less money to the leagues. And if the leagues get paid less money, then the players get paid less money. And so it becomes this sort of, look, until you get a players association that says, we will take less money so that we can get out of this sports betting thing that we're uncomfortable with, and they're going to keep taking the sports betting money.
Yeah. Finally, final topic here, Len Mead. The students, when you see and talk to students on the campus there at Southern in New Haven, in my hometown, what are their feelings on this? Do they want to stay away from this? Are they really curious about this? Any unease from the students? Because, I mean, man, they're getting to the age now, Len, where it's not just a dorm squares betting thing for the Super Bowl. They know in a few years, if not they're of age already, they can do this.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think it's like any other part of society. It's a mixed bag. Like, there are, and by the way, I won't speak this about, you know, the students that I know at Southern. I mean, just from knowing sort of college students and environments all over.
Sure.
There are always going to be some that are avid and interested and are probably overdoing it. There are some that are bet curious that now that it's legal, they might dabble in it. Though, let's be clear, it's not legal if you're under 21.
Yeah,
most of them are under 21.
Yeah.
To me, it gets a lot scarier when you start talking about high school kids.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we can go over 100 things that tell you that their brains aren't all the way developed yet to be able to have impulse control and things like that. And even though it is 100% illegal for a kid in high school, assuming they're under 21, to be betting, you know, kids are pretty smart and they figure ways around things. And I have no doubt that there are lots of high school kids that are getting into this. That to me is where, like, this is dangerous stuff, and it'd be good if there were better protections for it.
Len Bead, instructor in sports communication, sports marketing at Southern Veteran Sports Media Executive. Len, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate this. And continue good luck, Len. Hopefully we can chat down the road. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it too, Paul. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Len Mead there, and there's a guy that has worked with NESN, VISN, PointsBet, ESPN, NBC Sports, integrating the wagering into what we see and watch.